Now we come to chapter 7, and notice this. There are 32,000 that are assembled now under Gideon. And I'm reading verse 1 of chapter 7 of Judges. Then Jerubbabel, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose up early and pitched beside the well of Harod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now, my friend, this is really something. I think that when Gideon looked out over the 32,000, he said to himself, I wish they were double that number. I wish I had more. This man Gideon felt like he needed more. And now God says to him, he says, you got too many. I can't let you have the victory with this many. Why? Because Israel would say it was because of my power and my might. That's the reason, friends, no flesh is going to glory in God's presence. And that's the reason God has to take the weak instruments today. It's the reason he's always followed that method, and he still does it today, by the way. Now, this is the way he's going to cut down the number of the army. And this was a pretty good way of cutting it down. Verse 3, now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned to the people 20,000, and there remained 10,000. So that you see there were 32,000 in all, but he lost 22,000. And you remember this was God's condition, had been put down in the Mosaic system. We saw it back in the book of Deuteronomy, that God says that there will be this excuse for those that are drafted into the army if they be able to just be able to say they were afraid. Now, the question always arisen in my mind, why didn't Gideon go home? Because if there was anybody there afraid, he was afraid. I know two fellas that would have gone home had they been there. One's McGee and the other's Gideon, but he's the leader. And I think he's frightened when he got it cut down now to 10,000. And that's not enough. Will you notice what happens now? And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. Now, again, God says, even when it's reduced from 32,000 to 10,000, he says, this is too many. And I'm of the opinion at this particular time, Gideon is certainly ready to go home. But he says, now I'm going to try them. They go down to the water. So he brought down the people under the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth up the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down upon his knees to drink, and the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men, but all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. Now, this is a tremendous statement that we have here. 300 lapped water like a dog. These were dedicated men. You see, when they walked into the water, why, they just took their hands and pushed it up to their mouths and kept moving. And they said, let's get to the Midianites. Let's win the victory. God will deliver us. And then there were quite a crowd there, you see. 10,000 that went in. Only 300 of them lapped water like a dog. The 9,700, they got down on all fours. They took a drink and they said, oh, my, isn't this terrible to have to go to war like this. And do you know what you have here? The finest lesson in what is God's election and man's free will. Now, God chose 300 men. But how did he choose 300 men? by letting man use his free will. And had you gone down there, and you'd been there, and you'd have said to one of those 300, say, did you know God has elected you? He said, I don't know what you're talking about, but we're sure going to go after these Midianites. That's the thing. You know, you can stand and argue election and free will all you want to. It works, but you can't make it work by sitting down and arguing. It works out in life, friends. God had chosen 300 men. But you'd ask one of those 300, they would have said, I know nothing about the election. I haven't time to argue with you about that. I got to get over here to get at these Midianites. Now, if you'd gone to one of the 9,700 down on all fours, and you'd have said to them, did you know you're not elected? And they'd whine and say, yes, I'm always left out. But you see, they made the decision, each one of them, exercised his free will. God didn't interfere with one of them, far as their free will is concerned. And you know, you can argue about election and free will today, but my friend, Jesus Christ has offered to you, and it's a legitimate offer. It's a sincere offer from God, and he says, whosoever will may come, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. Now, don't tell me that you can stand on the corner and argue about election right now. You can't. You can come if you want to come. Now, listen, if you don't come, I have news for you. You weren't elected. If you do come, I have good news for you. You were elected. And that's the way God moves, so that the responsibility was upon these men, you see. And these men got down on their knees like this. Now, I've heard something else, and I know there are a lot of Gideons listening to me, and I'd like for them to listen now very carefully, and a lot of folk in churches. I went and preached to a little church. I was invited out. I already had a little church, and it was a wonderful little church, but they called me and asked me if I wouldn't go and preach at another church for a Sunday morning, and I got one of the students to seminary to take my church that Sunday, so I went way out in the woods in Georgia to preach. And I came to this church, and I never shall forget, there's a dear lady there met me. She's one of the leading saints. And she said, oh, Brother McGee, we're so glad you've come, but all that we have here is just a little Gideon's band. May I say to you, oh, how wrong she was. They had the laziest bunch of saints that you can imagine. You know, Gideon's band, they just happened to be those that were on fire for God. They wanted to win a battle for God. They wanted to serve God. And that wasn't true in that little church. A great many people think because they are few in number, they happen to be a Gideon's band. The chances are they're a bunch of dead saints that don't compare to Gideon's band in any way that you want to look at them. Now, God's going to give this man Gideon his final lesson before he goes into battle. He says to him, and I'll drop down to verse 10, he says to him, but if thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah, thy servant, down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah, his servant, under the outside of the armed men that were in the host, and the Midianites, and the Amalekites, and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. And here we got the grasshoppers again. And their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay along. And his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else, save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the hosts. And Gideon went down, you see, and eavesdropped. He went down at the edge of the camp, and he listened to these two soldiers talking. And they very frankly believe that God is going to deliver their hosts into the hands of Gideon. Now, God permitted him to hear that to encourage him. And I'm confident that it did encourage him. Now we come to this here, and I think I can probably save a little time if I don't read too much of this. But at verse 16, now they're going to have the victory over Midian. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch. Now that was at midnight. And they had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets, brake the pitchers that were in the hands, and the three companies blew the trumpets, brake the pitchers, and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hand to blow withal, and they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the hosts ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the hosts. And the host fled to Beth Chittah in Zererath, and to the border of Abel Meholah unto Tabath. Now, this is the record that's given here, and notice the strategy of Gideon. He takes the 300, puts them in three groups. They're given three things: pitchers, lamps, and trumpets. Now, the lamps are put down in the pitchers, and that means that the light went up so that they could not see it. You know, light, when it's put up at night into the sky, you don't see anything around you at all. And this was the thing they did, and then they took trumpets. And they talk about the trumpet of the Lord and the trumpet of Gideon. Fine, but the interesting thing is that they said it was the sword of Gideon, but there weren't any swords. Now, you will recall the Midianites were a nomadic people. This is something that the scholarly work of Bernie Musel, Breasted, and Garstan, they all tell about the fact that at this time there were these nomadic tribes of the desert that began to raid the land of Israel and to seize the crops and their supplies. And the Midianites and Amalekites, they were among those Bedouins of the desert. Now, they had a very loose organization. They moved as a disorganized nomads through the desert, and they were not an organized army. So here they set guards around the camp, of course, but all the people are asleep. They just sleeping here, there, and yon, and no organization whatsoever. And nobody expects anybody to attack at night. Begin with, you couldn't see. Now here comes Gideon, and he posts 100 of his men on this side, one on the other side, one around on the other. So these men, the thing they did, they blew with the trumpets, they broke the pitchers, and the light shone out. And when they blew the trumpets, each trumpet would represent that there were probably several hundred of the enemy present. Well, imagine one of these Midianites waking out of a sound sleep. The first thing he did, he started whacking with his sword in every direction. Well, the Israelites don't have swords. All that they did was just hold the light so that one Midianite could go after another Midianite. And you talk about a riot, was a riot. And they took to the tall timber and they went over the hill. They got out of that area, and this gave a tremendous victory to Gideon with just a few, you see. Now, there are some very wonderful lessons that are here. First of all, let me go back to this matter of the dew on the fleece. I want to look at that for just a moment. You know, the very interesting thing, we need God today to do an interior job of decorating inside our own lives. We need to ask Him for dew on our barren lives. You remember he says, I will be as dew upon Israel. God has said that several times. And you'll find that in Deuteronomy 33:13, he says, and of Joseph he said, blessed of the Lord be his land for the precious things of heaven, for the dew and for the deep that coucheth beneath. And then in Proverbs 19:12, the king's wrath is as the roaring of a lion, but his favor is as dew upon the grass. And in Proverbs 3:20, by his knowledge the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down the dew. And then in Psalm 133, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It's like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard. And that's the unity of the Spirit. By the way, the filling of the Spirit went down to the skirts of his garment as the dew of Hermon and as the dew that descended upon the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. And God has blessed in that way. And we need that touch. We need a fresh touch. We need the fresh touch like dew upon the rose bud and the grass in the morning. And we need a tender touch. You remember in Hosea 14:5, I will be as dew unto Israel. He shall grow as the lily and cast forth his roots as Lebanon. Well, the lily is delicate. And he'll come down like rain upon the mown grass. Even when we're in trouble and he's cut us down, he'll come down like rain. Our Lord could weep over Jerusalem, but do we weep today over sinners? The publican could smite his breast and cry out about his sin, but what about us today? We need a touch from God. We need a touch from God that'll make us stable and strong and rooted and built up and grounded and settled, as Paul said to the Colossians. And the psalmist said in Psalm 57:7, my heart is fixed. O God, my heart is fixed. And Paul could say, from henceforth, let no man touch me. And friends, we need today the dew of God upon our lives to bring purity into our lives. Peter said in 2 Peter 3:14, wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for such things, be diligent that ye may be found of him in peace, without spot and blameless. We need that today. God only uses a clean cup. He says, be ye holy, for I am holy. And there, having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of the Lord. What a wonderful picture that you have there. But may I say, let's carry through on something else that is here. And this is a wonderful lesson, by the way. We are told today that we have this treasure in earthen vessels. We're just like those pitchers today. And some of us, you know, are not broken. And as a result, the light doesn't shine through. And again, Paul said, let no man glory in man. It's not our light that should shine, but the light of Jesus Christ should shine through us, and it can only shine in a broken life. Ye shine as lights in the world, Paul said to the Philippians. And then if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, oh, I tell you, we need to be clear and clean today in our living, friends. What a message is here, a spiritual message in the story of Gideon, the man that God used, and he was a coward, but God used him. God chooses the weak things of this world, friends, and it's an encouragement to me. I hope it's an encouragement to you.